We're braiding sweet grass this time on Culture File. Paddy Woodworth has been helping us build a shelf of essential nature writing, finding those books without which our sense of the planet would be smaller and poorer. This time he turns his attention to a 2013 volume from a Native American botanist with a mission to reintegrate indigenous knowledge into mainstream ecological thinking, a job which, as Paddy Woodworth explains, makes Braiding Sweet Grass by Robin Wall Kimmerer a prime candidate for the Naturalist Bookshelf.
When Robin Wall Kimmerer interviewed for her first university botany course, she was rash enough to tell her professor that one of the main questions she wanted to explore was why the natural world was so beautiful. Why, she asked, did purple asters and yellow goldenrod combine so gorgeously? Not science, he told her gently but firmly. If you want to study beauty, go to art school. Her very popular book, Braiding Sweet Grass, is a rich, confident and eloquent refutation of that advice. She sets herself a very high bar, claiming to offer a braid of stories meant to heal our relationship with the world. Her braid has three strands. What she calls indigenous ways of knowing, plus the scientific method, and her own story as a Native American scientist trying to bring these two approaches to the natural world together, in service, as she puts it, to what matters most. She argues that the stories we choose to tell ourselves about nature and our relationship to it have vast real-world consequences. So she embarks on what another American environmental writer, Gary Nabum, has called restoriation as an essential prerequisite for nature restoration on a meaningful scale. In her view, the contrast between the story of the creation of the world shared by many Native American peoples and the story propagated by the great monotheistic religions in the Middle East and Europe is very telling. The American Sky Woman myth imagines our world created by a woman who accidentally fell from heaven to earth and created the natural world in collaboration with all living beings. So humanity and nature are understood as codependent from the beginning to the present. In sharp contrast, the book of Genesis casts out Eve and Adam from the Garden of Eden for tasting the fruit of beauty and forces them to live through the subjugation of the wilderness into which they were banished. Pope Francis, in his encyclical Laudato Si, bravely attempts to give a more ecologically positive reading of the Eden myth. But the dire consequences of the subjugation story hand the argument to Kimmerer. She sees Genesis as the forefather of our economic model of unsustainable growth. She poses a radical challenge to it, an ideology based not on fear of scarcity, but on gratitude for the abundance that already exists all around us. While expressing gratitude seems innocent enough, she writes, it is a revolutionary idea. In a consumer society, contentment is a radical proposition. Recognizing abundance rather than scarcity undermines an economy that thrives by creating unmet desires. Now, these are not new ideas, but I think they are very powerfully expressed here. And despite some lapses, they have all the more force for the context Kimmerer has created to express them. That context is based on her exceptional fusion of science and beauty, the two things her professor said were oil and water. At its best, her writing creates vivid images, sometimes unabashedly erotic, of biological processes. As she says, there is an earthy sexuality to a garden. You'll never regard sweet corn in quite the same way after reading this passage. A corn cob is an ingenious sort of flower, she writes, in which the silk is a greatly elongated flower pistil. One end of the silk waves in the breeze to collect pollen, while the other end attaches to the ovary. The silk is the water-filled conduit for sperm released from the pollen grains caught there. The corn sperm swim down the silken tube to the milky white kernel, the ovary. Only when the corn kernels are so fertilized will they grow plump and yellow. A corn cob, she continues, is the mother of hundreds, as many children as there are kernels, each with a potentially different father. Is it any wonder, Kimmerer wonders, that corn is called the corn mother? She goes on to describe how some Native American peoples cultivated sweet corn, squash, and beans, the so-called three sisters, in planting sequences and in patterns that enhanced the symbiosis, or dare we say, the cooperation, between all three plants, making each of them produce more abundant crops. She sees her Potawatomi people's agricultural practice both as an exemplar for our codependence with other living things and as a metaphor and a model to help us envision a time when the intellectual monoculture of science will be replaced with a polyculture of complementary knowledges. This is a quirky, multidimensional book, as likely to reflect on Kimmerer's own experience of motherhood as on awakening us to the wonders of the natural world and challenging conventional views of our relationship to it. It sometimes suffers, I think, from an Oprah Winfrey-esque, relentless American optimism. Kimmerer also sometimes falls into the familiar fallacy that all Indigenous peoples' relationships to nature were impeccable. But on a second reading, I have found these flaws diminishingly evident, and the insights and sheer joy delivered by Kimmerer's writing increasing like an abundant harvest.
Paddy Woodworth there, slipping Braiding Sweetgrass, Indigenous Wisdom, Scientific Knowledge and the Teachings of Plants by Robin Wall Kimmerer onto the Naturalist bookshelf.